Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it's about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hansen and Pat McClain would like to help you by answering your call. To join Allworth's Money Matters, call now at 833-99-WORTH. That's 833-99-WORTH.
Welcome to Allworth's Money Matters. Scott Hansen.
Pat McClain, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you're with us. We're talking about financial matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors and broadcast our program, release it on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air or podcast or whatever you call it these days.
Just a second opinion or third opinion or fourth opinion, whatever. An opinion. Let's go.
We have plenty of opinions.
I certainly do.
Yeah.
And sometimes I moderate them. Wondering if
sometimes don't you tip all the time
moderate my
at least you speak in your opinion.
Yes, but then I always want to test the other side of the opinion.
What do you mean?
Like if I say something and like, am I missing something? Like I was telling my son, he wants to go into business himself and he's looking at these small businesses and I said to him, don't ask yourself why you want to buy it. Ask yourself why they're selling it.
Oh, he's looking at buying some business?
Yeah, small business. Don't ask why you're buying it. Ask why they're selling it. Like, what's going on there that I'm not seeing?
Well, Pat, it's the same whether it's a small business
or
a stock.
That's right.
You buy a share of Tesla. Well, Tesla's down, right? Maybe it's a good time to be invested in Tesla. So you think, all right, I'm going to buy a Tesla. Well, when you take your capital, your savings, and buy that company, which is what you're doing, someone else on the other side's thinking, I want to sell.
That's right.
Always. Every transaction.
Every transaction. Every transaction. So when I say I have an opinion, you want to test both sides of your opinion against all the known information that you can actually, well, it's hard to actually get real information today. So much information is available. And where it used to be, when we started this show 30 years ago, there wasn't that much information available.
No, but actually before so Barron's would come out with the Barron's magazine on, it would be delivered to the bookstore by Saturday afternoon. And we used to broadcast Sunday mornings. And one of us would drive to the bookstore.
Correct.
Now we're aging ourselves. Right. To get Barron's magazine, because there was no online Barron's or no online anything. I remember used to calling a phone number to get stock quotes.
That's correct, right?
And Morningstar, the big research company, would publish these.
At points in time as it became affordable, we'd have the machines in the office. But the in-depth analysis, it was just numbers. I wonder, Scott, is there's so much information, it actually is making it harder to make decisions. I don't know. And AI. Oh, I've got a great story. Great, great story about AI.
All right. Mary's been on hold for a bit. Let's take Mary, and then we'll get
to it. I'll just show real quick. So I was with some friends of mine.
You're sharing the whole story.
No, it was a quick story. Their son, senior in college, had been contracting someone overseas to write his papers for this class that he wasn't very good at. So he had a contractor.
All right,
And then all of a sudden when AI, ChatGPT, the kid overseas started using ChatGPT to write the papers. So he's contracting with this brilliant son overseas to write his term papers for him. And then the kid starts overseas, adult, I don't know what it was, started using ChatGPT, boom, out of the class.
So here's how I look at it. Like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, as an employer, would you want the kid who is resourceful enough to figure out how to have an awesome product? I understand.
Yes. Yeah. The point of education. I don't know how I feel about it. But anyway, I just thought that when people talk about ChatGPT, and the kid was mad that the person he was contracting with to write his papers used.
You're like, wait a minute. You're cheating. You're violating the rules here.
And the kid was there telling me the story. And he was like, I can't believe this guy did this to me. And I said, do you see
the irony?
Do you see what's going on here? Anyway, his name will go unmentioned. But yeah, let's go to Mary because she has been 833-99-WORTH if you'd like to join the show.
Yeah, and love to take your calls. Mary, you're with Allworth's Money Matters.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
We are fantastic.
Fantastic. Good, good. So where to start? Should I just kind of mention my question, my portfolio?
Yeah. Hopefully it's something around finances.
Yes.
It is around finances.
Okay, good.
So, yeah.
I called the right show.
So any information you want to share with us, and then we'll follow up with our own questions.
Okay. I am 51 years old. I am in energy efficient sales for the home.
Okay.
I make between $150,000 and $170,000 a year.
Okay.
I am single. I have a home that is worth around $620,000. I owe $125,000
on it. Awesome.
Low interest rate?
Yes, 2.25.
Wow. Okay.
I have a condo that is worth $365,000. I owe $125,000 on that, but it has very high management and HOA fees of around $600 a month.
Okay.
Do you rent that out, or is that a vacation home?
I do rent that out. It's in a senior community.
And give me those numbers again. What's the condo worth?
$365,000, and I owe about $125,000 on that also.
And low interest rate as well.
And
well,
is it an old building? Is that why the HOAs are so high?
No, it's in a golf course community, like a Sun City.
Okay.
Got it.
So, and it's a condo, so I have the condo fees and then the facility fees also. So I don't generate a lot of income on that, around $600 a month. But it is positive.
But they take care of the outside of the house, the envelope?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's nice.
Yes, that's actually really good.
I have about $170,000 in a BlackRock account.
What does that mean?
I have, BlackRock's managing that $170,000.
Okay.
What else? I have an index annuity with $150,000 in that.
Where did you buy that at a bank?
No, I bought it through a company called Bankers Life.
Okay.
I have about $100,000 in my work 401k.
Okay.
And then I have $180,000 in a high yield savings account.
Okay.
So my question is, because my management fees are fairly high, I was thinking about selling that particular condo and then using the cash from that and then the cash from my high yield savings and buying another rental without high HOA fees for income and doing like a 1031 exchange on the small.
That's not a bad idea. It sounds like a nice condo to live in, or if it was a vacation condo of some sort, and you weren't trying to make any money on it, I should say. But from an investment standpoint of a rental, it's not the ideal kind of rental.
What's it rent for a month?
$2,200.
And is that market or below market?
That's market. It's just a one bedroom, one and a half bedroom.
Do you ever plan on living there?
No, it's too small for me. I thought about it, but it's pretty tiny.
Why'd you purchase it?
I inherited it.
Oh, when did you inherit it?
2 years ago.
And what was the value when you inherited?
Maybe $350,000.
Oh, yeah, then you wouldn't need to do a 1030.
I wouldn't bother.
Change on it.
I wouldn't bother.
Oh, okay.
You'd just sell it.
Okay.
Yeah, because your cost basis, assuming you inherited this, was this in a trust ahead of time, an irrevocable trust, or was this just come from if it was from a living trust?
It was an irrevocable trust.
How long was it in the irrevocable trust?
Oh, I don't know. Probably only about 2 years.
Okay, so what you need to find out.
Did one parent pass away and then it get put into an irrevocable trust and then your second parent passed away?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so it received a step up in basis at the first death.
But not this.
We don't know.
Yeah.
That's the question we want to ask is what is your basis on that? If your basis is high, I wouldn't mess around with an exchange.
Okay.
No.
At all.
Okay.
So are you putting the maximum into your work 401k?
Well, I can put up to 15,000 because I do have the catch up, the 5,000, but I'm considered highly compensated at my work. So it's limited as to how much I can put in my 401k.
Yep.
Well, put in as much as they allow, as much as you can.
Yeah. About 15,000 a year.
Is the index annuity in an IRA or outside of an IRA?
Outside.
And how long have you owned it?
2 years.
Only like 2 years.
So you inherited, my guess was, you inherited some money along with the condo and someone sold you an annuity.
No, actually, that was my old 401k from a previous employer I put into this annuity.
So it's in an IRA. The shell, the index annuity is in an IRA because if it came from your old 401k, you would have put it in an IRA, and that IRA, then you purchased that indexed annuity.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, don't apologize.
You have no need for an index annuity.
But the surrender charges are probably 10 years.
Yes, yes.
You know how long the surrender charges are?
10 years.
Yes.
10 years.
So what's your question for us? That house? So you don't need to do an exchange. Just you can sell that house. My guess is your basis isn't that low. And you need to check is, was it an irrevocable trust? When was it put in? And what was the approximate value and the date it was put in? It would, unless they had a lot of money or your parents' trust was really old, I doubt it went into the irrevocable side of it.
Okay. I'll check
that. I doubt that.
Yeah.
My question is kind of more like, since I don't need the monthly income right now, should I possibly sell the condo and then take that other $180,000 that I have in a high yield savings and put it into the market for 10 years? And at that point, buy another rental so that can supplement my income?
Well, there's a lot of different ways you could supplement your income. A portfolio supplements your income. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what asset do you buy? The question you're asking is, do I buy real estate so that I can provide an income in retirement? When you say 10 years, you'll be 61 years of age. So I'm thinking you're looking for income in retirement. Do I buy real estate to do that? Or do I actually put it in a well-diversified portfolio of stocks, bonds, and maybe some alternatives and provide income that way?
Exactly. I know it's a hard question.
Well, part of it depends on you and what you want and what your kind of tolerance for ups and downs in your portfolio. And the fact that you put $150,000 into an equity index annuity when you were in your late 40s, either someone sold you that and you didn't quite understand it, or you are terrified of any ups and downs in the market.
Well, I just bought the annuity actually 2 years ago.
That's right.
Right.
We understand that.
Yeah, just 2 years ago. So, and it was more of a little safety net of money just to follow the S&P.
The cost associated with it.
It's like saying, well, I want some insurance on my house. And so not only do you buy the insurance, but you dig a moat and build a moat and you build a big fortress around the house and you have sentries out on all four quarters. I mean, that's kind of which all has a cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do both, but it depends on where the condo. When I buy a condo today,
I wouldn't buy a condo.
I wouldn't buy a condo.
Then again, I have some rentals, and they're. I have a rental. I got a call from the property manager. The refrigerator that was placed a couple of years ago, something's wrong with the refrigerator. And I remember just having this conversation, like. My ETF never calls me. I never get a call from my portfolio. From my 401k never calls me in the middle of the day to tell me about a refrigerator that's not quite working.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like those sort of things. I mean, your best bet, Mary, is and every once in a while you hear it say this, it's to get a good financial plan. Sit down with a quality financial advisor, either pay for a financial plan or have someone will do it, part of the portfolio management. And you can, because I mean, what's important is that some point in time, you're going to need to replace $150,000 a year income.
Correct.
Which is not easy. Which is not easy. You've got a ways to go. I mean, to replace $150,000 in income, you're going to need...
Sure, you don't have a pension, right? So
I do put away about $60,000 to $70,000 in savings a year.
Well, maybe that's too much. Maybe it's too little.
Yeah, and the high yield, if you're putting it in that high yield, then and that's for retirement, then that's the wrong place.
Well, I was putting it in there in hopes that I'd have enough money to buy another rental kind of outright along with the sale of the condo.
Well, then you can certainly do that. But don't – I hear this all the time. Well, real estate never loses value. I don't know. There's a trade in San Francisco.
Oh my gosh!
Where it sold for 10% of what it did 10 years ago.
A commercial property. And went from $65 million to $6.5 million.
Yeah, and the $6.5 million, they're going to have to put a lot of money into it and wait a long time to turn
it. That's right.
I don't know the answer. The best thing you got going for you is you're a good saver on your income. You could be blowing all this money. Mm-hmm. You're a good saver. The asset class that you put it in is gonna, you know, if you feel like
if you have a foundation for, you're building a house, you've got the foundation laid, and now you're saying, I don't know, should I use steel beams or should I use wood? Do I use this kind of joist or do I? And you would only make those decisions after you determine what you were trying to build, right? Like, what's the ultimate objective here? So I think, Mary, that's why I think, particularly at this stage, having a good financial plan, saying what is it you're trying to accomplish financially first, which my guess it would be making sure you've got the assets set aside so that at some point in time you can quit work, or if you have to quit work, you've got income coming in to support your lifestyle. My guess would be that would be your number one objective at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah,
right?
Correct.
So start from there. Like if it's age 60, you want to make sure you have financial independence. Okay, let's start from there. Let's work our way back. What are the things that we're doing today that are putting us on track? And where might we have some shortcomings? And then we can look at, we can do a variety of different what-if scenarios. And I would say we, like whoever good financial advice you're working with, can do a lot of different scenarios. And then you can think about, all right, what makes more sense? Do I put some more money in the S&P 500? Do I look at buying another rental real estate? And what's that going to look like for cash flow? And then you can make an informed decision. Because otherwise, we're just looking at investments, what's going to do for the best next 5 years.
Yeah, and I don't actually know if this is actually, due to the fact that the envelope of the building is actually covered with the condo, this $600 a month condo fee doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah,
you're not going to have to replace a roof, a window, siding, paint, right?
Uh-huh. Well, people always get troubled by HOA fees. It's like, no, the money's not just getting burned. It's going into the property.
Yeah, when you say that you want to get rid of this condo, first thing I question is, why?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy condo as being single and working full time. It's pretty much kind of a no-brainer.
So I think that I would go back and do the analysis on that. But you mentioned the $600 specifically. That I got to tell you, if I own that condo and it was generating $2,200 a month, and I don't know, I'd have to look at what the net is. It may or may not be a good deal.
Yeah.
And if that were the case, what's the point of actually selling this condo and then buying another piece of real estate it's the equivalent? Why not just, this is, if I was sitting down as the advisor, I'd say, let's do the numbers on keeping the condo and then taking that high yield savings account and actually making that much more aggressive, because we'd look at the condo as the bond portion of the portfolio.
Oh, and she's got the equity and index annuity. That's fixed income.
And that's fixed income. And I would take and look at that high yield portfolio and say, let's just go 100% equities in that.
Well, I don't know how the BlackRock is allocated. And
my guess is that that's pretty close. So I don't know. I wouldn't start with the thesis of sell the condo.
Okay.
I just flat out wouldn't.
You would start with a thesis of what is it you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and then
and work your way back
and what are the asset classes that we actually use to get there. But- Anyway, we answered nothing.
And then in 10 years, I can make that determination when I get closer to retirement. And then, you know.
Yes. But you sell energy efficiency, right? Uh-huh. And you go into someone's home and you test the windows. And then you say, you know, you put that little meter up against the window. And you're like, you're losing 8% here and you're using here and we're here. And if you spend this money today, this is how much it will save you over time.
Here's the return.
Here's your return. Uh-huh. By you spending the time and energy with a financial advisor is no different
That's a good point.
That's a good analogy.
That's a perfect analogy. Right? As opposed to, I've replaced my windows.
Yeah, like, oh, but.
But you've got this big draft coming through.
You know you have no insulation in your roof. Well, the windows looked good. That's what I would do.
Okay. Okay.
And I should probably have you come over to my house for some energy efficiency.
Appreciate the call, Mary. I know it's funny, but I've got like a pocket door in my house. We built our house almost 20 years ago, a pocket door in the laundry room. And when it's windy, man, wind just comes ripping through there. And I talked like, unless I want to like tear apart the whole laundry room and
fix it, you got to live with it.
Maybe I should have an energy consultant.
I just walk around the outside of the house with a big, huge caulk just everywhere. The outside of my house just has caulk everywhere.
Looks great then. But, you know, it's interesting. I often hear this about condos, about the HOAs. Well, how high are the HOAs? And, like, particularly it's one thing if you've got, you're paying for a golf course or whatever, but let's just take, like, a typical condo facility, maybe even a smaller one. There's oftentimes, it's made up by a board. No one's getting paid on the board.
That's right.
Right? Oftentimes, there's no profit that anyone's taking from this. Matter of fact, there's a board that's going to look at what's it going to cost to replace the roof and all the.
And they may be getting economies of scale out of it. That, like when you go to get your house painted, you're not getting 50 houses painted at once. You're getting one house painted.
But
which
I think what happens oftentimes, people look at and they go, oh, the HOAs are too high. And it's one thing if you're paying. It's like, what are you getting for that? Because if you own a house with zero HOAs.
Yes.
And you don't set aside money each month for the repairs, you're going to end up one day have some massive repairs. They're going to like, whoa, how am I going to come up with 18 grand or
grand? And that was the question. Is that HOA cover the envelope?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk now to Jafar. Jafar, you're with Allworth's Money Matters.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're awesome. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yeah, Jafar, like the bad guy in Aladdin.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
The bad guy in Aladdin? I don't know if I've ever seen
Aladdin. Yeah, the bad guy in Aladdin, and they made a... Really? Even your kids?
Oh, they probably have. I just stick them in front of the TV most days and just leave it going. Throw in a TV dinner tray every few hours.
Yeah. Good parenting advice. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you, Dr. Laura. What can we do for you?
So I am calling to see if I could be doing anything else to better set my family up for the future, myself selfishly. We do have a daughter that is almost two. We want to have at least one more, and then I'm adopted, so is my father-in-law, so we want to adopt an older kid probably in about 5 to 7 years.
Okay. I adopted two children after I had two biological ones. Older kids, six and nine.
Well, and that's another reason why I look up to you guys is the adoption stuff is,
Don't look up to me.
Yeah, don't look at me. I was feeling sorry for myself yesterday as I'm having to discipline my 16-year-old. But anyway.
Don't look up to Pat. Pat didn't adopt any kids.
I'm like, I'm 57. I got teenage
girls. How old are you?
I am 38.
And you're married?
I am married. My wife is 34.
And what's the family income?
So family income, we gross about $22,000 a month from our W-2 jobs. Then we do have four rentals, soon to be five.
Why did I know when you started as a young man? I want to make sure those that actually. I mean, I just had the feeling that you'd been paying attention to your finances from an early age. So, all right, four rentals.
Yes, soon to be five. We're closing on our fifth one next week. So we gross, net about 5,500 from the four. It'll go down a little bit after we add the fifth one next week, just because with interest rates and stuff like that.
Where are these rentals located?
Four of them are here locally, and then
where's locally? Where are you? In,
Sacramento.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the fifth one's in South Carolina.
How and why South Carolina?
My mom is not in the best financial situation, so to kind of give back to her.
Okay, very nice.
I'm gonna buy a place.
Okay, which is why the income's gonna go down because you're subsidizing the rent, I assume.
Yeah.
How much life insurance do you have on yourself?
I have $2 million on myself, and then have $1 million on my wife, and they're both term policies, and we have about 15 years left on those.
Okay. 15-year level.
And are you saving in your 401ks?
Yes, we have my wife. Well, we both have 457. So we've last year was our first. Sorry, 2022 was our first year. We maxed them out, and have continued down that path. The path going on second year. Yeah.
And do you have a 401k available as well? Do you work for the state of California or a municipality?
State of California, no 401k. Just I guess I have the option to do the 401k. I've just been kind of stuck on the 457.
Okay, well, the 457 actually would be my first choice over the 401k. It's got some more liability in it, but we've never actually seen it triggered. I don't know if I'd worry about it. It's actually an asset of the state, not in a trust like a 401k is. So the reason in this plays, this show plays nationally on the podcast, but in the state of California, you have both a 401k and a 457 available.
And some other states as well, municipalities.
That's right. So I would, if I was going to save more money, and I assume you probably have $50,000 in liquid cash in a high yield account.
Yes, we do have about that. Of course, it's going down a little bit because we're closing on this place, but we will build it back up to about $75,000.
Okay. All right. Well, that's that was my guess. So,
and do you have a 529 plan set up yet for your daughter?
Yes, we set up the 529. We're putting $250 a month in it. One of the big questions is with the adoption stuff and adopting an older kid, we want to kind of front load that stuff a little bit more since the kid would be older. I am prior military, so if the kids go to a UC system, they will be able to get free tuition at UC schools, but we will have to pay for room and board and books.
I got nothing for you. You're doing fine.
Right. I know.
I got nothing for you.
You got something for me, please.
I might push a little bit more money into the 529. You could front load it now in the child's name and just change the beneficiary at some point in time.
Okay.
To another.
You can't split them though, can you?
I don't know if you can.
I don't think
split
you can
them.
Split them.
Yeah, but if you front loaded the one that is alive today, and then you would just quit putting money in when the second one, when you had the other kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So you could front load that one. The 529, knowing that it's more money than you want to put in, but you know you can stop those contributions whenever you wanted. And so, if you were going to save more, if you wanted to save more, I would use more of the 529. Maybe I'd put in 500 or 750 a month, and then I would plug into the 401k. But other than that, you're doing fine. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you.
Okay.
It's you know you're diligent, you're a good saver. What did you do in the military?
So I was in 2.5 years. So I actually got out at 20. So I was a petroleum supply specialist, even though I never really did that job.
Okay.
Yeah, I had other.
And then did you go to college afterwards, or did you just go right into career?
No, I did. I started my career at 21, but I went to college and graduated, used my GI Bill.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So actually I had a friend in high school came back one day and he told me he got a job and I asked him what it was. And he said he was a petroleum transfer engineer.
Worked at the gas station.
He worked at the gas station.
I almost said a joke like that.
But, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine.
Okay. Do you feel like our term policies are good enough?
Yes.
Okay.
What's your income?
So I bring in gross about $15,000 a month.
And will as you continue to have more children, will your wife continue to work outside the home, or at some point in time does she want to spend more time?
The agreement we had is that she continues to work. She can retire when I retire in 11 to 12 years. So she's going to work.
And so it's 11 to why do you want to rush to retire early?
I'm getting tired.
You're 38.
I want to be on my own schedule okay. more.
All right.
I don't know if I'll ever stop fully, but I don't want to be.
You know, so age 50 is where you're shooting for.
2 million. If you added another, you know, million each to your wife's policy and it might not,
or even looking at what a new 20-year level policy.
If you had 3 million, I could make an argument on that you're fine, and I could make an argument of 3 million. I think you should, you know.
He's got quite a few assets saved already.
That's right. I think you're probably fine.
If anything, look at getting a new 20-year term policy.
Yeah, and the reason is that when you requalify, there's less risk to an insurance company because you went through the medical. So it's okay to buy a 15 or 20-year policy and not hold it to the full duration and just requalify every 4 or 5 years. And you just have to price it, all you have to do. Okay. But you're doing fine. You're doing fine. You're perfect. All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Wish you well.
All right.
Hey, on a side note on term level policy. So here's how these work, and I'm going to tell you a story about a friend of mine. So a term policy, it's for a term of time, right?
Which means that the insurance premium and the face value or death benefit is guaranteed for that period of time.
Yes, only that period of time. And most of these, most if not all, term policies have an option to convert to a universal life or a whole life policy at the end of that term, okay? But the premiums are extremely high because the only people
in the conversion.
Yes, because the only people that keep those are the ones that can't get insurance anywhere else. So it's known as adverse selection in the insurance industry. And for most people, they'll need a term for a period of time, just like talking to Jafar. He needed term, he's got a young kid, he's going to adopt a couple more, but down the road, the kids are going to be gone. He's not going to have the need for insurance. So I've got a buddy of mine that had two boys, had 20-year level term policies, raising the kids. His wife took care of taking care of the family finances. And just having a conversation, she had made some mention about how their life insurance premiums were $700 a month. And the term had run out.
Oh, and converted.
It converted, and she just thought, oh, I guess it's much more expensive now. And it, like two and a half years of paying.
And then does it start with a new surrender charge at the conversion?
I don't know. He didn't need the insurance anymore.
He's
of retirement age. He financially could be retired.
So
the only reason I'm bringing that up is like, pay attention to these things. If you've got it, like I have a 20-year term level policy. When I get my annual premium, I always like, how many more years do I have on this? Like,
yeah.
Make sure that you're suddenly paying for.
Yes, because their premium probably went from $150 a month to $700 a month.
That's right.
And she just continued to pay
all the bills and all that. You know, thinking about it. So,
which is actually a positive selection for the insurance company there, because he actually would have been able to requalify.
I'm sure he's not the only family that happens to, right? People just continue to pay it. They just kind of don't think about it much.
Yeah.
But that's the type of thing that if you're in good, the longer you have an insurance policy, it's the same thing with universal life. The longer people hold it, the mortality of that group actually starts to decline, because people who are in good health oftentimes will go out and buy a new policy because they can get a better rate.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk now with Tina. Tina, you're with Allwoods Money Matters.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
My call is about company stock. And I just have a few questions about, you know, how much of your net worth should be in your company stock? When should you start liquidating it? What are some strategies for liquidating it without paying, you know, a whole bunch of taxes, et cetera?
This is a great question. And You know, I watched a movie this last year about Enron, and a documentary. And these people were out in front of Enron with their boxes leaving the building with the big E on the side, screaming about how they had lost all their money in Enron stock.
Mm-hmm.
And how Enron, and I thought, you know, the day before they had drunk the Enron Kool-Aid.
Yes. Maybe they were defrauded, but they played along as well.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Right. So,
and then we look at people who worked for companies like Apple their entire career and are extremely wealthy. And you're like, wow, look what happens when you hold on to your company stock. Maybe you're just lucky to work for a company who does extremely well year after year as opposed to one that.
And if you were at Apple in the first 5 years, you probably were highly disappointed in your selection as they went through Steve Jobs and Steve Jobs. So tell us your situation. Mm-hmm. What is your overall investments, and then what percentage of that is in your company stock?
Yeah, so my husband and I are later career, and we've been pretty focused and intentional savers, leveraging our company 401ks and other savings opportunities, et cetera. So we have we can retire, and we think, you know, our financial advisor says live to well beyond 100 and not worry about it. And, you know,
you're at that point today?
Down that path. She says yes.
Okay.
We're prepared to work for another year or two before we go.
And what's the dollar amount?
But of the amount in this.
Yeah, in the 401ks, IRAs, the overall.
Yeah. So
if you put it all in a suitcase, how big would the suitcase be?
Yeah, it's about $3 million in qualified funds, another, you know, $2 million in non-qualified after tax, and then I'd say another 25% of our total in this stock, and it's a private company. And it's done exceptionally well. It has a great trajectory, but it makes me very nervous.
Do you have any liquidity option in the company? Private companies, you don't always have an opportunity to sell it.
Yeah, about twice a year they make an offer to buy back.
Okay, so the 25.
And what industry is that in?
Aerospace.
Okay, so the $5 million, 1.25 million is in your company stock. Is that correct?
No, it's an additional 25.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So it's a bigger.
And
number.
Is any of it held in an ESOP or is it all individually held?
The majority of it is in just individually held. It's not in any like tax favored status.
And there's not that. Okay.
And how close are you to retirement?
Let's just say a year and a half.
Let me ask you this question. If the stock went to zero, would you still be able to retire in a year or two?
I think we might put it out for another couple of years.
You want to?
I think we could. No.
See, I mean, the concept behind diversification is not designed to get wealthier. It's designed to protect where you're at, right? So when we're young, working for a growing company, like, yeah, maybe I've got more in there than I was prudent, but I'm taking a chance on it. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, that's all right. I'm still young. When we get to retirement age, particularly when retirement's right around the corner, for most people, they're more concerned about maintaining their lifestyle than they are about becoming wealthier. They don't want to go be poor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right?
That's when diversification comes into play.
What's the family income?
Right now, with both of us working, let's just say in $400,000 or $500,000 a year.
And so all of this is gain in this. So how old are you guys?
I just had my 59 and a half birthday.
Okay.
My husband's about 6 months older 50th than me.
Birthday.
So six. So here's the thing that I look at too is the tax ramifications. So,
of course.
Right. So if you wait until after you retire and you start liquidating these, right, dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any pension income anywhere?
No, we have IRAs and 401ks, but not a
and you're non-qualified. Are there any stocks that you could sell at a loss? Anything that can trigger a loss there?
We do that when there is opportunity. We don't have anything right now.
And you don't have any loss carry forward from
it's
a tough
a
one.
Little
yeah,
bit,
this is really, I got to, this is, oftentimes we, if you don't know what to do, you just split the difference and then you're right either way. But this one, because of the tax and retirement so close.
If you were retiring, December of this year, would say, okay, the next year, the next couple of years, we're going to have a strategy of reducing your exposure to this stock, and we're not going to take any income from your 401ks or IRAs. We're going to make sure your non-qualified tax is managed in a tax-efficient manner, so we can pay a very low capital gain tax on this.
Yeah, and if your income wasn't as high as it was today, I'd be inclined to.
Right.
What's your family income today?
4 to 5. So I'd be inclined to hold it. So when you said it's 25% more, right?
Uh-huh.
So you've got almost
a million bucks in it.
Yeah, you got $1.5 million in it.
Times two.
Oh.
Oh.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh. I'd start paring it down.
And how's the value today versus 6 months ago, a year ago, 3 years ago, 8 years ago?
Like a rocket ship.
I'd start paring it down.
Just keeps on going up.
I'd start paring it down. Either that.
Nothing goes straight up forever.
Either
right?
that, or I would actually pick a similarly publicly traded stock and do put options on it to give myself some downside protection.
Which is essentially, options, you're paying a premium that.
That if it goes down in price, you get paid. And what you're doing there is you're trying to identify companies that are in the same industry that do the same thing, that actually will help you. So you're getting a sibling stock, if you will. So you're using financial instruments that give you some downside protection, and that you're paying that premium so that you can take advantage of the tax ramifications a year from now. And your advisor may or may not.
Is this aerospace company affiliated with a billionaire who has other companies?
Yes.
Oh, I'd pare it down. And I most certainly would. I would consider paring down and doing some put options on at least half of the portfolio.
Option using what?
That
a similar stock.
There's no similarity to that company.
Just because of the guy that runs it.
Yes.
You're
who's
right.
Brilliant.
Which is, you listen, what makes you good makes you bad. I'd pare it down. I'd pare it down.
Okay.
Is your advisor saying the same?
Yeah.
It's hard to do, though. It's
you make
really,
so much money. But you're at the finish line now.
You're almost done.
Gina, by the way, if you sell some, it's invariably going to go up.
Look, I just remember working with clients with Agilent what was the spinoff of AT&T back in the day? The
High Flyer. What was it? Was it Lucent?
Lucent Technologies. And I sold 50% of this client's portfolio, and it went up for another year and a half, and the client couldn't get over it, and how much money they
until
would have
went,
made.
Until it blew up 95%.
Until it went down by 95%, right? And so he was right, and I was right. But you're so close to the finish line, I would bite the bullet, and especially if you've got a charismatic or semi-charismatic leader.
How's the value even set if it's private? Who's making up the share price?
Yeah.
And how many times earnings is the share price? When there's a nice thing about public markets, mm-hmm. we know what buyers and sellers. When it's a private company, I would definitely, if you were 35, like let it ride or whatever.
You're not. You're so close to the end.
Yeah.
You're so close. You're like, yeah. And by the way, you said, I could stay and work a couple more years. If this stock blows up, you might not be able to stay and work a couple more years. I mean,
yeah,
look at what they did with Tesla employees last week. They went to the gate, couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
10%.
Right.
It, depending upon the location, up to 10%. I would get rid of 50% of it. I would bite the bullet.
I would too. Immediately, next time opportunity.
Because what you said,
time capital gains that you're paying, your net's still going to be worth more than the company was worth 6 months ago.
Understand. And what changed our view on it is when you said times two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because now it's over $2 million in that particular stock, correct?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Over three.
Probably. Yes.
No. Two.
All right.
Well, okay. I would pair it. I'd bite the bullet.
This has been helpful. Thank you so much.
It's a hard.
By the way, if you take half, you're right and wrong, right? So equally. So if you sell half and the goes up, you're like, well, I'm glad I kept half. And if it goes down, you're like, I'm glad I sold half.
So I'm 61.
Putting the baby.
I'm 61 years of age, and I'm trying to put myself in your situation, how I would act. I'd sell half.
Because it's based on the size of your portfolio, it's meaningful. If this all went to zero, it would have an impact on your retirement.
Well, why wouldn't you just sell? Why are you waiting to retire?
Well, maybe she enjoys what she does. She likes those 11 p.m. standing meetings that Elon has that one too.
We're enjoying what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure it's a really. Do you and your husband both work for the company?
No.
Mm-mm. I'm sure it's an exciting place to work.
Yes.
It's got to be really interesting.
Yeah. So half.
Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Tina.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, wish you well.
Wish you well.
And did you read the Elon Musk book, the latest one? It's fascinating.
I haven't.
As you said, those things that make you good and make you bad. So you would look at Tesla stock is down about half over the last year. And some of it is because he's alienated a large portion of shoppers, right? Buyers of cars.
That's right.
Because he decided to become political. Whether you think it's a good thing or not, a bad thing, it's irrelevant to this conversation. But that's the fact is that he took his reputation and applied it in a different area, and he's alienated some people. So the demand for his automobiles aren't what it once was.
Yes.
And
the stock's been all over the place this week.
It's hard to quantify risk on something like that.
What makes you good makes you bad.
But his, I think you'd find I'd recommend anyone read the book.
All right, I will read it.
It's fascinating just how he thinks about things is so different than most. And he works, I don't know if I've ever ran into anyone who works quite as hard as that guy. And what drives him to push so hard? And when you read the it just, it's, but he has these standing meetings. He'll be behind it something and literally expect all his leadership team to be available at 11 p.m. every night for a standing meeting. You sleep as little as possible. You have no other life when you're in these surges he goes through. It's a surge trying to get the rocket. You have no life. You're expected to have the cot in the office. And it is really interesting.
Interesting guy. We'll see how it ends. Right.
Seriously. I know. He's an interesting guy. I know.
Right? You see how it ends. Look. The Truth Social stock.
Yeah, because this last call. It's not just the company.
It's the leader.
He's such a unique leader that, if Mark Zuckerberg did something else, I don't think someone would think, Facebook and Instagram are all coming to an end because Zuckerberg's not around anymore, right? If something happened to Musk at SpaceX, people would be like, uh-oh.
Well, what happens now?
Yeah.
So, but I read an article this morning about this Truth Social.
Is that the Trump?
The Trump. And it's It's,
is it still
they call
billions?
It the new meme stocks because people are actually getting into it, not based on the fundamentals, but it's their way they could show support to Donald Trump. Which, by the way,
it's worth billions, and it hardly has any revenue and
any
loses
revenue.
Money.
Yeah, but that's what it's
regardless of what you think of Trump or I love the guy. Just from the company standpoint,
it's turned into a meme stock, like you know, and there's people shorting it, but then they all get together and they're like, listen, we need to stand up for Donald Trump, and they're buying the stock. Which, by the way, whether you like Donald Trump or hate Donald Trump, doesn't matter to me. It is a terrible way to make your investment selections based upon your political vote.
If you decide to buy that stock, only do it because you think you're for some political reason and expect to lose it all.
Exactly. Right? And don't short the stock either on a political reason because you may not be able to withhold the heat on the opposing side.
If you buy a stock, you're the only amount you can lose is what you invested. So you put in 10 grand into a stock and it goes to zero, you're out 10 grand. You short a stock.
And it's unlimited.
That stock goes to the moon. I mean, people who shorted Tesla stock over the last decade just gotten slaughtered.
They finally got right if they stayed the trade.
It only in the last couple of years.
That's right.
The thing went.
That's right. That's right.
went up like crazy for them.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, anyway, this is these have been good calls of this program. And by the way, if you want to ask us a question at some point in time, we schedule times when we're in the studio and love to take your call on your financial planning question. It might be that you're overweighted in a particular company, you're thinking about retirement, or you wonder if you've got the right kind of investment portfolio and you want just a second opinion, wondering if you got a question on your estate plan and how to structure things right in this day and age, just send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com with what your topic is, questions@moneymatters.com, and we'll schedule a time to take you. We'll be in the studio, and just like we were able to talk with Mary and Jafar and Tina, we will chat with you.
Help us. We will help you any way we can.
Yeah. And if this has been helpful to you, forward it on to one of your friends and give us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcast. This has been Scott Hansen of Pat McClain of Allworth's Money Matters. Have a great rest of your weekend.
This program has been brought to you by Allworth Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice. You should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.